Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right. Welcome, everybody. It's Tuesday. I literally had to ask one of my producers what the day of the week was. Anyone that's tracking that must think that I move through the world just completely clueless as to time and space. And you're not that far off if you're thinking that. I'm not going to lie. Okay, there's a lot of things going on in the news. But before we get to that, question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. Today's question is, what's an appropriate time, when, to ask about STD? Something that a lot of people have a lot of anxiety around because of the implications that question might create in someone or even in themselves. So we'll be talking about that. And also coming up next, we're going to be talking to Raif Darazi, HIV advocate and influencer, about dating with HIV, HIV in our culture, and also kind of talk a little bit more about John Vaness from Queer Eye coming out as HIV positive. But right now, let's talk about some breaking news. Nancy Pelosi announced a formal impeachment investigation into President Donald Trump, and I am here for it. Let's hear a little clip.
The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry.
Okay, so applaud. Let's get that going. Hold on. There we go. Bernie Sanders tweeted out, "We appear to have a president who may have used funds designated to protect the security of the United States as a means to gain financial political dirt on an opponent. We need to begin the impeachment process immediately." Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, love her. She tweeted out, "At this point, the bigger national scandal isn't the president's law-breaking behavior. It is the Democratic Party's refusal to impeach him for it." And John Lewis has also come out and called for the impeachment of Donald Trump. So everyone's jumping on that. You know, again, we'll see what happens. But, you know, shame on someone who's not only broken the law, but has also used his platform to reinforce xenophobia, sexism, homophobia, et cetera. I mean, the list literally goes on. So I'm happy to hear that. Bam. All right. Now, pushing forward out of that. Just doing a little political moment. You know, every now and then on Loveline, we got to get political. Look, and here's where, for those that are saying, what does this have to do with anything? I'll tell you what. It is directly tied to mental health. Why? Because part of mental health is for someone to feel safe in the country. Let's just start there. For someone to feel safe at work and not have those rights rolled back. And if you don't feel safe, or you don't feel like you have rights with employment and finances and all that because of your race, because of your legal status, because of your sexual orientation, that is directly a mental health issue. More importantly, the institutional systemic racism, homophobia, et cetera, that currently exists in our culture, that's also a mental health issue. That has a direct impact on people's psychological and emotional functioning. So we can't think that somehow politics can be left out of anything, because everything is truly political. Is that the feminist in me speaking? Yeah, absolutely, 100%. But everything has politics woven into it. Even those that choose to opt out of recognizing the political in everything, that is itself also a political move of privilege. So that's how that relates. Okay, in beautiful body positive news, because I'm always waiting on this, a men's underwear brand called Box and Scandal, I'm not familiar with them, they're out of the UK, they're launching a campaign to fight against unrealistic male body image representations and the toxic effect it has on mental health. So basically what they're saying is they're never going to use traditional models, quote unquote, amid the growing crisis for men's mental health. And they said, you know, look, advertising, media, and entertainment industries are part of this unrealistic portrayal. And also, it's made for every kind of body. So they said, let's highlight that and see that, what that looks like. So
yes, queen.
There you go. See, yeah, I'm here for it. Brad Pitt. You never hear this guy saying much. Like, I was surprised to stumble upon something that I would thought was really relevant to bring to the show. But every now and then, right? Brad Pitt said that he is ready to kick masculinity to the curb. His quote, "We got to redefine it." So he has a new film coming out called Ad Astra. Not, have no idea what that, you know, but great. Glad you're still making your stuff. More importantly, though, he basically said that this movie has an element to it, and I'd be curious to see the movie and see how so, that is about examining retrograde ideas about masculinity. Huh. I don't know if that's like a subtext or a dominant theme in this film. Again, I don't know, and I probably will never know. This isn't the kind of film I go see. I'm not a fan of big budget films. But he says basically you have to redefine it. I think that's stunning. He goes on to say, it's just not working anymore, referencing, you know, masculinity as it currently is. And he says, I'm longing for a greater connection. I've got to see what my part in all this is. I think that's stunning. This is someone who's built a career off of really being an archetype for a lot of standard traditional models of masculinity, and he's pushing back on it. And I think that that's stunning. You know, I'm always here for anything that's expanding or diversifying these few little rigid ways that we're able to exist in the world. And as someone myself who's male identified, I also can speak to having been raised in a culture where I'm not able to express a full range of emotion. Anything that falls under the heading of being seen as gentle or weak or too vulnerable is automatically demonized. And I've said this before, and I'm still always trying to practice it. My goal is to try to cry more and to cry more in public, because for someone who's male identified, mask identified, that is a very radical, revolutionary thing, just for my own mental health and well-being. Also for my intimacy and connection with those around me, but also for my ability to just be present fully on this planet. I mean, like, my God, when's the last time you saw someone male-identified crying in public? Think for a minute. Some people might say never. When's the last time you saw your father cry? Sit with that. Maybe the answer is never. I mean, these are really powerful things. So anyway, that's one of my goals. I challenge you all to do the same. I love the little goals that I throw out at people. Question of the night's up on our Love Line IG page. Tonight's question is about the appropriate time to ask about STI statuses. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about love languages. Oh yeah, we love to sling around those concepts. What does it mean? What is it about? And is it useful in our relationships? Coming up next, though, Raif Darazi, HIV advocate influencer. We're going to be talking about HIV, dating, sex, love, all that good stuff. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Our question of the night's up on our Love Line IG page. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show, and also talking about love languages. That's one of those things that people sling around. We're going to be talking about the importance of them, the meaning of them, but also some of the flaws. But more importantly, we're with Raif Darazi, HIV advocate and influencer. What's going on?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, your chair's so much higher than mine. All of a sudden, I just had a weird height panic. But that's okay. Take the high chair. Ah, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So what's interesting is a couple days ago, Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye, those who aren't familiar with him, came out as HIV positive. Mm-hmm. And it's had like a ripple effect.
Totally.
So talk to me just a little bit, for the people that aren't familiar with your work, how you yourself got into HIV advocacy.
So for me, it was about, I was diagnosed with AIDS back in 2012. So that was on my 27th birthday, and part of that year after was about me like figuring out like my place in life. What am I going to do? Am I going to be healthy? What's going on? And I was like looking for role models and examples in the media and on YouTube especially, and I just wasn't seeing anything or anyone. And I was like, well, that sucks, but if there's nothing there already, then maybe like I can be that for somebody else. And that's kind of what spurred me on to start talking about it, or at least think about it at that time, because it took me a while.
It's powerful, because that's the part I actually pulled out from your bio that I thought was most interesting, is the lack of role models. Because when I read that, I started thinking in my mind, and I was thinking, I can't think of anyone I do as well. Maybe it had been noted that someone was positive or diagnosed, but it wasn't something that they necessarily led with or tried to advocate
and
for.
The reference that I would get so often was like, oh, Magic Johnson. And I'm like, bro, that's like 30 years ago. Like, where's everybody in between? You know what I mean?
And he's not relatable to everyone.
No. And Charlie Sheen, I'm like, okay, well.
Oh, that's right, too. But he's also not very relatable as well.
Right.
But it's interesting that there's no one from the LGBTQ community that was kind of
like our age, you know, vibrant, living well.
Our age. I like that. So what are your thoughts about Jonathan Van Ness coming out? You then see that as a positive move.
Yeah, I think it's freaking awesome. You know, I didn't know a lot about him necessarily before him coming out. I just knew he was on the show. And I just know that he has like a really bubbly, charming personality, and like people love him, and he has like good vibes. So for me, that's like, yes, we need more of that. Like people who look healthy and happy and vibrant.
Thriving.
Exactly.
Thriving. Someone who's still moving forward in their life in all the ways they wanted to, not held back by anything.
It's not a hindrance.
Yeah. I was surprised to see it happen. And I don't know what I mean by that, other than I guess I recognize that for some people that are in positions in their career that have something to lose, I can imagine that there's got to be a moment of sitting with, am I ready to take on whatever impact this could have if there's a negative one?
Yeah, and I know that he had been wrestling with that for a while.
Okay.
That's what I read in his bio. And interestingly, in the past week, another person came out, Gareth Thomas, with HIV. He was like an ex-pro rugby player in Britain.
I know this. Yes,
so, yeah, it was like back to back. And I thought that, wow, that's like, I don't know if this is necessarily a tipping point or a critical mass, but definitely it's interesting to see two like high profile people coming out with it.
I like to see it. You know, I do tend to try to forecast where we're moving in terms of like sex, relationships, and gender. Those are kind of like, and also things within sexual health. And I do see us, thankfully, moving towards more honesty, authenticity, and more like kind of accommodation for that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad for that, because one of the things that comes in, and a couple weeks ago I had Janelle on, and she runs the what used to be called the STD Project, it's now the STI Project, but she was diagnosed with herpes 20 years ago, and she was talking about her own journey, and I was just saying to her that it's really great to see in the past couple years more people coming forward and trying to put together resources, but also advocacy for these things, because in my practice, that's one of the things that a lot of people come in struggling with, is they get a diagnosis for something that's not curable, and then they say, what's my life going to look like now, especially in terms of dating?
Yeah. And I think there is a good amount of education out there for sure. There's a lot of facts, there's a lot of numbers, but as far as seeing like a person living out their life, I think that adds such a like a psychological benefit for a lot of people.
Yeah. And if they look on your IG, you're definitely living your life.
In the gym mostly.
No, but again, going back to what you said about Jonathan being kind of, you know, bubbly, is there's a lot. I mean, that's one of the things. So going through your images, like I just try to get a felt sense of someone. And there's definitely like a lot of happiness and celebration. I think that's powerful to see.
Yeah, I feel like I have just intrinsically a pretty optimistic outlook on life. Yeah.
Okay. Where's that come from?
You know, I don't know. I can say that I grew up and I had a lot of hardships early on. And that taught me to really value and appreciate life. And that kind of built an inherent strength in me. And kind of having a sense of gratitude has given me like a good perspective.
Gratitude's a powerful thing. So we're talking tonight with Raif Darazi, HIV advocate, about HIV and dating in the world. So weigh in on this. Then we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to really dive deep into like the whole dating process and how that's reoriented your life. But you said when you got the diagnosis, you took on the role of, I'm going to be an advocate for that. Where does that confidence come from? Because that's a big thing to step into. To not just own it and celebrate it, but to like publicize it.
I've always had somewhat of a rebellious, strong spirit growing up as a kid. And I think that's just with practice and habitual.
Well done.
Yeah.
I like a good rebel every now and then. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk more about sex and dating with HIV diagnosis. But question tonight's up on our Loveline IG page. Weigh in on that. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. And later in the show, we're going to be doing a little freak on the streets answering your Q&A. But more importantly, right now, we're with Raif Darazi, HIV advocate and influencer. So we're kind of talking about a whole bunch of stuff, but let's jump into the important stuff, the sex and the dating.
Let's do it.
So upon getting your diagnosis, when or how quickly did your mind go to dating?
Oof. I mean, instantly I was like, well, there goes that. That's over. Or, you know, I even considered for a while going to only HIV positive dating sites, stuff like that. It took me about 6-9 months to really feel ready to start dating again, though. And then at that point, I was like, let's not limit myself to HIV.
What was the turning point? What do you think was that which propelled you the most?
So interestingly, shortly after my diagnosis, I ended up breaking my ankle and I was bedridden for like 5 months. And I was like, okay, I need to do some serious inner work. Like something's not working.
The universe
in my life
is like, chill and make some changes.
Like, sit down and work. So I did everything I could think of, like The Secret. I did like motivation, inspirational books, dream boards, vision boards, journaling every day, gratitude journal, like everything. Cause I'm like, I got to change something inside, clearly. And so after about like 9 months, that's when I was like, okay, I'm starting to feel like I've got my stride a little bit and I can go out and explore.
And how was that? I'm sure that journey was a mixed bag in some ways. Cause people can be horrible.
For sure. And I was definitely, I was ready. I was expecting to get a lot of negative reactions. I definitely didn't put on my profile that I was HIV positive, because people are so quick to just like swipe or just go on to the next person. And sure. It's like, if you give them one reason to like not even consider you, then bye-bye.
Smallest infraction. Yeah. Disregarded.
Yeah. And I saw it as an opportunity to educate if people would give me the time to at least have a conversation. But a lot of times I would wait until the first in-person date before I brought it up. And to be honest, and I think this might be a part of just living in West Hollywood in LA, is that I would bring up my HIV status, and sometimes they would be hesitant or they would be put off, but then I would educate them a little bit, and then usually, more often than not, they'd be open to it.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second, because I love your willingness. I also recognize the exhaustion that can come from the emotional labor of educating people, because I take that on where I'll be on a date and they'll say something, I'll be like, well, that was a racist joke and that's not okay. That was actually very body shaming, and that's actually offensive to people of larger bodies. That, sir, was sex negative, and this is the reason why we don't want to say that. And so I realized I had to like, it's exhausting sometimes. So did you ever have those moments where you're like, oh my God, can people just do their own education and be better? Hurry up. I had those moments for you.
I'm pretty patient when it comes to that. And God I'm bless. Pretty empathetic to other people. Okay. So I never really like held it against another person for not knowing better.
Because those apps can be nasty. I mean, again, as someone myself.
You said abs.
Oh, that the too. Abs are great, those apps can be nasty as well. But the apps, the dating apps, you know, as someone who has a lot of different privileges, it's interesting to see how overtly nasty people can be with what they're not even willing to try to encounter.
Yeah.
They just wipe out entire populations of people based on these like little qualifiers.
I think mentally I disconnect like what they're actually saying to me or to people and just who they are as a person and what they're going through and their happiness level and their like ability to enjoy life. And I know that like when someone's that angry and that hateful, like that's a you issue.
That's right.
And, like, I don't take that on.
Yeah. Cause you're the question, the understanding is that's going to show up in various other areas of their life and you don't want to encounter that.
Exactly.
Either. Right. Yeah. So what advice do you give to people? Cause one of the things that comes up a lot on my show, when I travel and lecture in my offices, someone says to me, how soon into the dating process or the courtship process should I feel the need to disclose any kind of like, you know, STD, STI
I mean,
status?
That you're opening a big can of worms with that question. I just came from the United States Conference on AIDS, and we were in a workshop where we were actually talking about disclosure and as it relates to being undetectable. And so a lot of people feel now that when you're undetectable, you shouldn't have any obligation to disclose at all because you cannot transmit the virus at all.
As in there's nothing to disclose in their mind at that point. Right.
I feel it's definitely just relative to every situation, every person. Like, I couldn't give a hard, fast rule on that.
Yeah. Another friend of mine that's an HIV advocate, he's in the East Coast of New York. He skews more along the side of what you were just saying, where he doesn't feel the need. Or let me say it like this. He would say, I no longer will take on the responsibility of being accountable to other people's sexual health and wellness. Mm-hmm. So they need to ask me the questions they need to ask. I don't any longer feel the need to volunteer. And also because he's undetectable, his position is I'm not responsible because there's nothing to transmit. Yeah. But I also have worked with people on the other side where a diagnosis being disclosed to them down the road, although they understood, they also said it shook my ability to trust a little bit because I still felt like something was being withheld.
I totally understand that. And I'm actually of the viewpoint that I want to disclose it as early as possible too, because I do feel a sense of responsibility to for advocacy and just awareness, visibility. I think that helps reduce the stigma. But I get that, especially because when you're disclosing, it's like you don't necessarily know if you're going to be dating this person in a month from now, or if it's just a hookup,
That's right.
If you can trust this person, or if you're private about it, they have information that they can use however they want with whoever they want. You have no control over that.
And I completely support that concept. And that's one of the things I say to people as well. Just be open to the idea that you don't know where they're going to go with this information. And if you're out there heavily dating, or you're a big participant in hookup culture, you are possibly sending a lot of people out in the world,
especially in smaller towns where everybody knows everybody. It's not fair to
there's a risk there. So also I want to talk about the concept of like secondary disclosure, the idea where, you know, you let people know and then the question, or how often is the question, I guess I should ask, how did that come to be?
Wait, what do you mean?
Where people often will want to know, well, how did you become positive?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so like for me, it's a little ambiguous because it potentially could have been having protectionless sex with another man, or it could have been from the relationship that I was in for 3.5 years at the time, which I thought was monogamous, committed, but then later on found he was cheating and then he had AIDS as well at that time. So I don't really know personally.
But what do you think of the value of that question?
I think it's... it's almost like fishing for, like, how did you get it? Is like, do I judge you with stigma as someone who's like going out and hoeing it out?
Like, did you deserve it?
Exactly.
Did you ask for it? Yeah. It's very victim blaming.
Yeah.
Or not even victim blaming. It's just, like you said, very much entering the conversation already loaded.
Yeah. It's like if you find out that the person was born with it, you're like, oh, like my heart goes out to you. So much compassion. But it's like if they knew that you were just having sex casually as you saw fit, then it's a different reaction.
Yeah. That kind of stuff breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. This topic brings up a lot for people. Rafe, so where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram. My name, Raif Derazi, R-A-I-F-D-E-R-R-A-Z-I. It's actually the same on all platforms. YouTube.
Oh, lucky man.
I do a lot of vlogging on YouTube, and then I just started on Twitter.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks for being on the show, and also thanks for the work you do, because people like you are a beautiful resource for me to send patients that I work with to kind of get a little bit more empowerment. So
awesome.
Thanks for the work you're doing.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, coming up next, we slide into the DMs and them talking about love languages. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, y'all know the drill. Question of the night, it's up on our Love Line IG page. As always, tonight's question is, when is the appropriate time to ask about someone's STD or STI status? We talk about that. It's an important concept, important question, kind of loaded, kind of triggering for a lot of people, but, you know, we're going to go there. But right now, it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore it with confidence. All right, here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, I have a really intense anxiety when it comes to dating and sex. I don't think I'm sex phobic. I'm comfortable talking about sex and watching porn. I get anxious anytime I need to meet someone new. But in a dating context, the anxiety really ramps up. I feel like there's something wrong with me. I just want to be able to go on dates and also live my life like everyone else. What do you think? So, yeah, it doesn't sound like a sex phobia. We'll just take your word for that. If you're comfortable talking about sex, watching porn, so that means you're comfortable psychologically and socially, you know, being present with sexuality and engaging it. That's awesome. Well done with that part. But you get anxious whenever you meet someone new, especially in a dating context. So it sounds like you have some social anxiety, right? And that doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. There's a lot of people that have social anxiety because maybe, well, there's a multitude of reasons. I myself have social anxiety. I'm actually quite introverted. I know it shocks people when they think, God, this man can talk to anyone about anything and just doesn't ever shut up. But give me a microphone and I can go to town, but sit me down at a dinner party and the anxiety spikes and I panic and I get awkward and I forget people's names. And it's a mess. So there's nothing wrong with that. There's no right way to be in terms of socialization. Some people are asocial, which means not social. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a bad thing. It's also cultural. There's some cultures that think us Americans are freaking obnoxious. Go to Switzerland, where people prefer people being a little more subdued, a little more introverted, a little more thoughtful, a little more mindful. So don't feel bad about that. But the dating piece, I respect that. You want to be out in the dating world. Your friends, I guess, are dating. You said you want to feel like everyone else. But just remember, we want to always right size it. Not everyone's dating. Not everyone's social. It's easy to be on your couch, being more introverted or quiet or doing self-care. And on your IG, you're seeing all these people out doing their, you know, hashtag squad goals and their matching outfits and dyed blonde hair, jumping around from music festival to music festival. That doesn't have to be your life, and that's okay. So I just want to, I want to weave that in there. It's okay if you prefer less social, more one-on-one. Seek that. That's what I do. If I have to go to a dinner party or social event, I find someone interesting. I look for the strangest person in the room I can find, knowing they're going to have a wealth of interesting things to say to me. And I go sit off with them and I go deep and intimate and close, and that feels safe to me. But the dating piece, it's practice. Part of it is some work on self-esteem. You got to work on your self-esteem because you got to feel good about what you're bringing to the other person. As I said before, dating's like a potluck. You got to be proud of that macaroni dish you're bringing so you can happily stand behind it and serve it to everyone. But it's practice. So go on more dates. And the more dates you go on, the more you're going to realize there's nothing to feel unsafe about. There's nothing to feel anxious about. It's just fun. Because that's the thing. Dating's supposed to be just fun. I think sometimes the anxiety that's amped up is this expectation that meaning's supposed to come out of it. We're supposed to connect and I'm supposed to make sure they like me. And am I saying the right thing? And it's like, oh my God, it's supposed to be fun. So create fun scenarios with people that you think could be fun and just go and have fun. Kind of dial down the anxiety. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we're going to talk about an odd law in Indonesia. Wow, they need some sex advocates over there. And also love languages. You'll sing the Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
So for those of you that are astrological junkies, what's going on? Are we in retrograde again? Because I am having a lot of technical difficulties, and it might just be that I don't know how to do things.
Libra season.
What does that mean? It's Libra season? What does that mean? Nothing? You have nothing to say about it technologically? Just throwing words out there like that? That's producer Jeffrey literally not enlightening us at all. But to all the Libras, congrats. It's your season. We're going to be moving into Scorpio season. That's when it really gets good. It's my birthday. I'm a Scorpio, y'all. I'm almost a Halloween baby, October 27th.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's about to get spicy.
Spooky.
That's right. So we're moving towards eggplant season. That's what that means. Scorpios coming in. All right. Question night's up on our IG page. Weighing on that. And then later we'll be doing a little freak on the streets. Brittany, I want to talk about something that's going on in Indonesia. This kind of stuff is always fascinating. This is another example of how we can be very American-centric in our thinking, where we forget often that there are other countries and places around the world and cultures that see things very differently from how we do, and that there's a lot of oppression going on. So Indonesia is in the middle of rethinking a possible ban that they might have on sex outside of marriage. Wait for this. Thankfully, Indonesia's president has delayed a vote on a controversial new law that would outlaw sex outside of marriage. Under the law, there would be a ban on sex outside of marriage, which could result in a 1-year prison term. Sit with that for a second. You could go to jail for a year if you have sex outside of marriage, and living together outside of marriage could lead to a 6-month prison sentence. It's amazing how, for some cultures, marriage legitimizes things. It makes living together acceptable. It makes sex all of a sudden healthy and acceptable, literally overnight. We actually, there are some places, states in the USA, where underage sex illegal unless they get married, then made legal. If your parents will sign on the dot, the sexuality goes from traumatic and underage to all of a sudden legalized because of the magic of marriage. And that's the problem, where we use marriage to legitimize things that shouldn't be legitimized. But somehow marriage has that power. I mean, really sit with that culturally. So anyway, the president is considering not allowing this law. Oh, dear God. Check this one out. Also in Indonesia, there might be a law that would have a maximum 4-year prison term for women who have an abortion. But the Human Rights Watch has said that the new laws would violate the rights of women, religious minorities, lesbian, gay, and transgender people, as well as freedom of speech and association. Setting back us. So, yeah, this is going on. And what's, you know, Bali, it's a big popular destination. Millions of people every year go there. So, anyway, heads up. Be careful. You know, that would happen to y'all. Okay, love languages. We all love talking about love languages. What are love languages? Basically, it's a way to understand how your partner interprets love. They can see themselves as being loved by you by receiving gifts, quality time together, words of affirmation, physical touch, acts of service. Basically, the concept is that everyone has a love language. It's the manner in which they, I mean, a lot of people talk about it as how you express, but it's more about understanding how the other receives it so that they feel loved and cared for. Because sometimes someone will say, I don't feel cared for, and the person's saying, I give you all the time, I give you all my downtime. But their love language is more about physical touch and affection. And because that's not present, they don't necessarily interpret what you're doing as being loving. So it's important for us to check in with ourselves and our partners to understand what's meaningful to us. We can make that request. What's meaningful to them, we can try to offer love and care through the lens of what's most meaningful to them. And the whole thing is that these things are a little bit of a communication and a relational hack, right? We can try to create more bonding and connection that way. But if you're in a healthy relationship and your love languages aren't compatible, that's okay. They don't have to be. It's just about understanding and having a willingness to kind of like really reach out and give your partner what it is that they need. So it's just about clarity and understanding, and they can shift. And so I think that there's something really powerful about both sides, is really kind of understanding what your partner needs. And is your relationship really a relationship that has a high concentration of that? It's not going to solve everything, because there are some things that are going to be problems that live outside and beyond that, but it's an important thing to kind of look at. I mean, ideally, I guess you and your partner would both have the same language. I think that would make it quite easy, but we don't always. And I'm trying to think, you know, what always frustrated me about the whole language, love language concept, was that sexuality was kind of left out of that. Physical touch is in there, but it's usually more around the affection piece. But I think sexuality is really important, because for some people, we're realizing that for them, feeling loved is when they feel like their partner's eroticizing them.
right, where they feel like their partner is showing sexual desire, and that kind of lives outside of this whole concept of just physical touch. So just know that love language, we reduce it down to, I think, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 specific components, but there are things that extend outside of that. So it's about a lot of like self-reflection. But yeah, the acts of service thing is always interesting, right? Where you're having someone who's doing things where they're putting themselves out and they're kind of centering you. Receiving gifts, it's a rough one. I've yet to meet someone who said like, listen, affection, that's fine. Time together, eh. Acts of service, maybe, but give me a lot of gifts and I'll know you love me. That could be a really hard one to swallow. I think that would probably be the one that would turn me off. I think that'd be the one love language that I wouldn't be able to align myself with. That's just too materialist for me, where in order for you to feel cared for, quality of time doesn't matter, words of affirmation, not so much, but you have to receive gifts. I mean, my gosh, isn't birthday time and Christmas time stressful enough for many of us? Because I'm also traditionally a very horrible gift giver. It's not because I'm not thoughtful. It's because I just don't think in terms of materialism. I think in terms of like time together and affection and verbally expressing care and love. And so when it's time to like concretize it with an object, I'm at a loss for that. I just never found that very romantic. Because it's not personal, even if it's something that's thoughtful. And again, like my mom was a very amazing gift giver and they're always very thoughtful. And so there's a lot of emotionality attached to them. But for me, I'd rather just write a very loving note or card, just expressing myself deeply and verbally more so. That to me is far more powerful than like, here's a really cool sweater or hoodie, which again, I'm not mad at a cool hoodie. But like, I don't know. Yeah, I just can't work in those terms. And the materialism just kind of throws me off. Anyway, so that's your love language. So sit down and ask yourself that, right? Like, do I know what my partner's love language is? Do I know what mine is? Have we ever talked about it? It can be really meaningful and transformative for some people. I don't live or die by it clinically, but it's something that has come up before. You know, sometimes it's really glaring. All right, question of the night coming up next. So weigh in on that. And we'll be doing a little freak on the streets. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we are back. Question of the night, answer it, yo. But now it's time for Freak on the Streets.
Freak on the Streets.
All right, what do the kids got for me now?
Okay, so what do you do when you really like someone that you've hung out with a few times, the chemistry is there, but you don't want it to move too fast? I'm not looking for a committed relationship here, so how do you pace it so nobody gets hurt by expectations?
Okay, first off, I love your question because inherently rooted in it is a lot of care, compassion, and maturity. Because what I'm hearing you say is, like, I want to be clear. I don't want anyone to get harmed. I don't want anyone to feel bad. I love that because a lot of people would just opt for, I'm just not going to be very forthcoming with what I'm looking for, what's happening, and I'm just going to kind of, like, I don't know, wing it. So I appreciate that. I also like your own self-reflection that you're realizing you don't want anything serious or committed. Again, because not all dating or sex has to be about working towards building something more serious or committed or exclusive, right? Some people date because dating's fun and interesting and dynamic, and they're not necessarily wanting to focus on one person or get into a relationship. And sex can be that way too. They want to have sexual relational development and experiences. So that's awesome. A few things. There's a couple ways I would target this. One, be very careful with the words you use. Don't say or do anything that implies that you do want a lot of seriousness or closeness, right? So use very casual language. That's one of the first steps. Just be monitor your language. Number two, again, be careful about certain things that culture are signifiers of wanting something more serious. You know, again, it's never about game playing. I'm always about authenticity. And so just be honest with the amount of space you want, meaning someone's texting you a lot, and that's a little more serious, closer, committed than you're looking for, don't respond right away. Don't be readily available. Don't prioritize them. You know, really focus on making plans with other people and going on other dates. And sometimes it's important to actually share about that, right? It's okay to let people know that you're dating other people. Sometimes that's a really powerful boundary setter where you say to someone like, yeah, you know, I'm single. I'm happily single. I'm not in any rush to get into anything. I'm just kind of taking my time and having experiences. And that's a really, really clear, loving way to let people know kind of where you're at. But usually it's about pacing. That's usually what it is. Don't see them too often. Don't prioritize them too much. And really keep them in the exact position you want them in your life. But I love that you're thinking those terms.
What hey, Dr.
Sorry, y'all. There's a weird sound in the studio, and I can't pretend like I don't hear it. Sounds like there's like a gigantic monster bumblebee flying around somewhere. But it isn't. We're in the middle of constructing something in the building, and apparently this time of night is when people like to do construction. Anyway, y'all, I'm trying to do a show! Yeah, all right, let's hear the second question.
Hey, Dr. Chris, I'm talking to this guy that I really like, but I've noticed he's emotionally immature, and I don't know if I want to put my energy into dealing with his maturity level. Should I give up, or should I try something with him?
Well, the way you just framed that question, I can hear it in your voice. You're already not wanting to. If you did, you wouldn't have that question. But I think you're asking me to kind of tip you over out of it. Emotional immaturity is really, really, really hard to deal with because that's infused in every part of relating to someone. Whether it is casual dating or sex only or whatever it is, emotional immaturity is not going to allow any of that to have a lot of health and sustainability. So, my gosh. And again, regardless of what you're trying to form with someone, there's an important part of just literal psychological and emotional communication that happens. Making plans, conversation, again, even if it's just sex and casual, conversations happen, and their emotional maturity is what allows those things to happen. So I don't know. I think that's a powerful deal breaker. People are allowed to be where they are maturity wise, but there's a vast distance between you and where another person's at. It's going to end up being very frustrating and very disappointing. So yeah, that doesn't sound ideal. I can already tell that there's a lot of incompatibility in there. So yeah, you got my support. I'm gonna try to tackle this gigantic bumblebee. I'm gonna go deal with these construction workers. Try to do a show. Coming up next, question of the night. So weigh in on that. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, question of the night time.
Question of the night.
Right. Notice there's silence behind me. We've gotten rid of that loud bumblebee, aka the construction. Again, you know, God bless. People work hard, but it is an interesting hour of the night to be doing full-on construction. Okay, question of the night tonight's question was, when is an appropriate time to ask about STD and STI statuses? Let's see what y'all said. You know, you guys are smarty pants, right? We're all about sexual health and wellness. Y'all said when you're both ready to be sexually active with each other. That's generally when I give my most blanket-based advice is when someone is actually coming in contact. And that's when we talk about informed consent, right? Consent is about someone saying yes enthusiastically to having sex, but we have to talk about informed consent, meaning you can't say yes to something if you haven't been given all the information about what you're actually going to be participating in, right? And so informed consent is when someone's able to consent from a place of having all the information that they would need to have. So Nell said, I think when you both have agreed, you're ready to have sex. Bam. That's right. We're talking about when is the time to ask about STI status. Someone said before sex. Someone else said before sex. Someone else said before engaging in sexual activity. I love it. I'm actually learning to say all the different ways to say sex. Someone said, if you're considering jumping in those sheets, truly, we all need that respect for each other. And thank you for using that word. I do think it's about respect, where I think it's about honoring that in any relational dynamic we have with someone and sex, even if, as I said before, it's the most anonymous, never going to see again, one back alley moment, it's still a relational intimate experience. People are still walking away different, feeling great and better about themselves and sexuality, feeling worse, feeling better off, nourished, feeling worse off, whatever it is. And respect, I think, is about recognizing that human beings, whenever we come in contact with each other, we impact. And I want everyone to want to have a positive impact on people. And so I think that's kind of part of it. Someone else said, anytime before engaging in sexual activity. Someone else said, when you're on a date and you feel things might progress. Okay. So you're kind of reeling it a little bit further back, but I'm into that. Someone said you shouldn't have to ask. People should just be straight up about it. And that's kind of an interesting conversation that we were having earlier is I want accountability to be on all ends, right? I think that part of being an adult and part of sexual health is not putting all the responsibility on another person to make disclosures, but I think it's also important to ask questions. I really put responsibility on both parties. I want us to ask all the questions. I don't want it to just be on everyone else to anxiously disclose because, you know, again, part of asking is relaying the message that I'm open to having such a conversation and not everyone is, not everyone presents themselves that way. And so I like that question because again, it says that this is a safe space to dialogue about this because it should be an ongoing conversation. If someone responds and says, well, I'm glad you asked, or I need to make a disclosure, whether, you know, whatever it is that they're disclosing around, you know, STDs and HIV status, I want it to be conversation, because then the next question should be, okay, so let's talk about safer sex practices, right? I want it to lead to how can we move this forward in a way that everyone feels comfortable. Someone else said, as far as when's the right time to disclose or ask about STDs, someone said, I do before we have sex. The reaction to my question can be a deal breaker. I love that you bring that in. I think that's stunning. Everything matters, right? And the way someone deals with being asked certain questions, I think, says a lot about their health as a person and also the, you know, how, what kind of sex partner they're going to be. Beautiful. All right. Coming up next, DMs, listening to Love Line, Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line
with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
Okie dokie dokie dokie. That's right. It's that time, y'all. Time for some DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Just so you guys know, these DMs come from both the Loveline IG DMs and also my personal ones, because Dr. D has what we call good boundaries in self-care, and I just do not answer them during my day-to-day because I am busy in my clinical practice, doing the podcast, working on my next book, traveling to lecture, trying to live my damn life. But I think your outreach is important. I love being available. And so what we do is I read the DMs on air so that everyone can kind of learn and benefit from them. Because what's interesting is that it's a lot of repetition. It's a lot of the same things that people are still, you know, trying to make sense of and struggling with. And it's more helpful when I can kind of make it more broad-based for everyone. So keep them coming is basically what I'm saying. That was my landing point. Like, keep reaching out on the Loveline AG or on mine, and you'll hear your question asked. All right, here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, I'm listening to your segment about toxic diet culture, which, by the way, FYI, sidetrack, we are going to be doing a weekly body positive segment. Feel free to flood producer Emmy's IG page asking her when that's happening, because she's spearheading that. She's very busy, though. She's prepping. She has a show coming up. Okay, I'm listening to your segment about toxic a bodybuilding show. Come to her show. Okay, I'm listening to your segment about toxic diet culture and how people choose to be unhealthy if they want to. How people can choose to be unhealthy if they want to. Correct. All things I agree with. Good. But here you go. But just for argument's sake, see, the minute someone starts a sentence with "just for argument's sake," I don't want to go any further, because we don't need to argue about it. You agree? We talked about how toxic diet culture, you know, these concepts are actually often eating disordered behavior, and we've normalized them, people starving themselves and fasting and all sorts of things that can really trigger people. So I don't know why we want to do an argument's sake. Like, I really don't. But let's go all in. So you ask, why is it that when someone is extremely underweight, then it's okay for people to get involved and get them help for anorexia? But if someone's extremely overweight, no one can say anything. I would love to hear perspective on this. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conundrum you bring up. I mean, look, my broad-based answer is I really think we should back away from commenting on people's weights and their body. Again, what that can often lead to is shame, and shame is not a motivating place from which anyone makes any changes. And we never know why people are gaining or losing weight. And that's why I problematize when people say things like, you look great, you look like you lost weight. Well, maybe they're struggling with an illness, or they're in deep depression or grief, and it's not a positive thing. Or someone says, you look great, you put on weight. Well, you know, again, maybe that's also born out of something problematic or triggering. And that's why I think it's better just to not comment on people's bodies, right? But I do agree with where I think you're going with this, which is that, you know, anorexia is a life-threatening struggle that a lot of people have, and that, you know, treatment is necessary at times. A lot of times, though, it's dependent upon that person realizing there's a problem. And so it can be a personally developmental thing. But I know what you're saying. Again, I really think it's just important in general for people to not do health policing, which is to make your thoughts known about someone's health. I think when in doubt, we set a boundary with ourselves that we let people have their own private journey with their bodies. I would say err on the side of that. Stay out of that. It's just really detrimental otherwise, and it can create a lot of chaos for people, you know, especially when people are generally already aware of what their body's likes in the world. So, you know, again, it's just about compassion and care, but there's not always a right answer for all these different pieces. I do think that there is space if you're in a relationship with someone and you feel safe sitting down and talking about any concerns you have for them. I think that's a really valuable, healthy part of a relationship. Hey, I noticed that you've been drinking a lot, or I noticed that you've been eating a lot less or a lot more, sleeping less. Is there anything you want to talk about? Is there any way I can help you? Like, we can enter those conversations in a non-pathologizing, non-judgmental way and just letting them know I'm here if you need my help and I've noticed some shifts, right? I think that can be appropriate. But I know that a lot of people that are of larger body are used to having people kind of shame and pathologize them. And so that's why I would just be more thoughtful in that way. But yeah, great question. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, y'all, that's our show. As always, it's podcasted and we are on the wearechannelq.com website. We'll be back tomorrow night. So thanks for hanging out with me and y'all have a good old night.
Love line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.